If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 632. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about cathedrals and ossuaries, Mucha and Schindler, as we go to Central Europe, to Prague, Krakow, and Budapest. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Today, we're going to talk about the 2018 Amateur Traveler trip to Central Europe. Today is one of those episodes that we do about once a year where we're talking about what happened on the most recent amateur traveler trip, and we're talking about it in hopes, one, that you'll come on the next one, because the only way to improve on the great group of 14 people we had on this trip would be if you were on the next one. But we're also talking about it so that you can use this information for planning your trip to Central Europe. And I've got four people who are going to come on and help me do this. There are people who are on the trip with me: Daryl, Derek, Lorraine, and Holly. And so we'll be cutting into their comments as we do this. But this trip was to Central Europe. It was to Prague, Krakow, and Budapest, as I mentioned, with a quick stop in Slovakia on the way. This trip was a little different than every other trip we've done because we didn't have a tour guide the whole way, because we were in four different countries with four different languages. So we were using J-Way, who has been a sponsor of this show before, and they set up a walking tour in every city that we went to orient us. We had a dinner in every city that we went to with the representatives of that city. We had contacts with them. We did a couple other things with them, like a wine festival in. But then we had a lot of free time as well to do and explore. And so you'll see the different people in the group made different decisions in terms of what they were going to do with that time. And we'll talk about some of those decisions. And then they made sure that we had hotel accommodations, that we had a way of getting around. And so we spent some time as a group and some time exploring individually. And that's different from last year, for instance, in India, where we had a guide with us the whole time, or next year in South Africa and Botswana, where again, we'll have a guide the whole time. And because in that trip, we don't want you wandering off from safari camp. One of the reasons we could do that, and you'll pick up on this, is that all three cities were easy to manage and easy to handle on your own and navigate, etc. Daryl had a couple tips you should know.
Those cities are kind of easy to get around. Make sure you don't walk in the bike paths in the city.
Yeah, those bicyclists can be fairly aggressive.
Public transportation is easy to get around. Just make sure the first time you validate your card.
Yeah. And the nice thing about an orienting walking tour is you learn those things and learn that they do ticket people. We started in Prague. Some people came in a bit early, as they are wont to do on these kind of trips, to spend a couple extra days there. Dave, who is Holly Sussman, Holly will be on the show, Dave will not, did a lot of time researching the Prague part of the trip, especially relying on the Honest Guide to Prague YouTube video series, which are terrific. And he ended up doing some strange things like the Elevator of Death, the Paternoster in Prague, which is a constantly moving elevator in the city hall that you step onto and off of while it is moving and try not to get yourself caught. And a number of people in the group took the first day before we officially started to go see Vyšehrad. And Vyšehrad is the other castle in Prague. The Prague castle is very well known, and I had been to that, but had not been to Vyšehrad. Quite enjoyed our trip out there. Not too difficult to get to on public transportation. Some great views of the city and almost no tourists. Derek had this to say about Prague.
Prague was probably my favorite of the places we were.
Mm-hmm.
I also think maybe that could be because I was there longer than the other cities we were at. But in general, I think because it was small and compact, you could see a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
It just had a little bit more to it all in one area, and you could really get a lot bang for your buck, if you will.
One place in Prague you think everybody should go to?
I'm going to say the museum we all went to was...
The Museum of Communism?
Yeah, the Museum of Communism definitely was something that I saw and you think, yeah, maybe I'd go there. But I really appreciated the modernness of that. I thought they did a really good job with the setup of the museum and how it looked and the displays, the videos and everything. So that was quite a surprise for me.
Yeah, I didn't get there this time, but from the pictures that I saw, it's larger than the last time I visited. I know it has moved, so I wish I had in some...
That whole area, and I enjoyed the churches. Mm-hmm. For me, I had like a religious epiphany in one of the churches in Prague, so I feel like I kind of left part of my heart there. Our Lady Before the Snow, so I definitely say, go there, it's amazing. Maybe everyone will have a religious epiphany. I don't know. Maybe it was just me. But that square by the Communism Museum,
okay,
that whole area, I think was really cool. I ended up seeing a little duo busking girl group there,
okay,
called 20 Minutes. And they were fantastic. The day that I had went, I ended up buying a CD of theirs and was overwhelmed. They're really great. It had the markets right there. The tram lines came through so you could hop wherever you wanted to go afterwards. That was just a really cool part of town that you wouldn't have thought because it wasn't the old town square.
Mm-hmm. And Dirk mentions the old town square, which is very beautiful in Prague. The old town square, the Charles River Bridge, the castle. But if you want to see those without hordes of tourists, you really need to get up early and do that if you want to get pictures without crowds of tourists. We also did two things that we're going to reference later. We did a food festival in Prague that was really just aimed at the locals way up on the hill above the castle. And then we also did a side trip to Kutná Hora. Kutná Hora is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, which had a beautiful church, which we'll talk about, and then also probably best known for the Bone Church. This is an ossuary where there are the bones of tens of thousands of people. There are skulls in piles of pyramids, but then they've also taken some of the bones and used them to make art. Derek and I had this conversation about Kutná Hora and also the art of Alfons Mucha, who is an Art Nouveau artist.
One thing that I was really happy about that I didn't know that it was going to work out was Mucha, and that the fact that Prague now has the whole Slav epic on display.
I don't know how long that's going to be on display. That's the tricky thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too bad because I drank the Mucha Kool-Aid and was super in love with him and beforehand, but like I was at the museum, I could have spent $400 in that place, but seeing that was really great. And I know beforehand it's in Japan, it's in Brno, it's off here. They got to figure that out. I hope so.
And you were at the Mucha Museum?
Yeah.
I think you may have been the only one who got there.
Yeah, and I had gone like the day or two ahead because it was like, he was one of the biggest things for me for Prague.
Okay.
And the Mucha Museum, they made me mad because they're like, no photos, and how could you not want a photograph that gorgeous, amazing artwork. But if you like Mooka, or if you like Art Nouveau, that's definitely a place to go, because it was just a feast for your eyeballs. And they actually had some of his larger posters that you could, you knew back then they couldn't print them all on one sheet. So you could tell like where somebody had to print these things and then kind of stitch them together with glue or tape or whatever. So it was really authentic. I really appreciated that. And there's good banh mi within the same block. So, you know, get dinner and Mooka at the same time.
Well, and I didn't get to it this time, but I've had pictures on my, well, actually right now as I'm looking at my computer, my desktop background is the Mooka window from the cathedral, because it is that vivid colors and characters and things, but didn't get to there. But I was surprised and pleased by the artist in the style of the Art Nouveau who did the Kutnohora windows. I just thought were stunning. That was my favorite part of Kutnohora. It wasn't the bone church, which, you know, I still think you can use my body for science when I'm done with it, but please don't use it for craft projects.
I understand, like, some people thought it was really creepy. I had been into ossuaries before in
I have also.
Portugal and whatever. So it didn't, like, creep me out in terms of that. But it is disconcerting when you're there and you're looking at it and you're like, well, that's somebody's hip bone connected to their leg bone connected to their skull. And it's a fan. Oh, wow. Look at that. Like, I just don't know if I want somebody playing Tinker Toys with my bones after I'm dead.
Yeah, I've been places where there have been pyramids of skulls or things like that in what I thought was a more respectful way. And I think when they the way they started with that, you know, that's what they had. And then basically in the 1800s coming in and saying, hey, we could make art out of this. That for me may have been a step too far. But again, the main church.
Definitely a very interesting place.
Oh, very interesting. But the main church in Kutnohora with those stunning Art Nouveau windows, I thought was just spectacular.
The Mooka Cathedral window, the one that has that in Prague, I was kind of disappointed when we got into there. You see, like, Mooka window, and you're like, oh, it's going to be like Mooka windows. No,
just
it's
the one.
Just
the one.
It's one. And so the rest of the windows, you're kind of like, oh, isn't that kind of a letdown afterwards? Okay, whatever.
There are certainly more things to do in Prague. We went to one of the most beautiful libraries in the world. Prague has two. One we didn't get to is in the Jesuit University. And the one that some of us got to at least was the Strahov Library, which was quite beautiful up at a monastery above the Prague Castle. We also went to the Petrin Lookout Tower, which looks like a mini Eiffel Tower. Some people took the time to get to some of the concerts that Prague is known for. One thing I don't think people got to on this trip was to the Jewish museums there. There's a number of old synagogues that have been turned into museums. I'll tell you about the history as well as the Holocaust and some of those things, and I don't think we did that on this trip. For more information about Prague, we do have an episode of Amateur Traveler on Prague. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. We then took the train from Prague, but on the way to Krakow, we made a stop, and we made a stop at Auschwitz and Birkenau. And these are, of course, the Nazi concentration camps, another UNESCO World Heritage Site, as is downtown Prague. And I'd say with Auschwitz, I was struck by the orderly, clean, pristine, park-like nature of this horrific place. And in Birkenau, just the scale, just the absolute huge size of the site, and gave you some idea of how big the effort was to wipe out the Jewish population, the Gypsies, as well as eventually the Poles. 2 million Poles were killed in the camps, and the intention was to get rid of them eventually as well. And Holly had this to say about that stop. What was the highlight?
Well, it's not really a highlight, but it certainly is. It's a highlight. Yeah. And that was probably visiting Auschwitz.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
It's just because it's unforgettable. It's so impactful. It is something you'll never forget, something that brought me greater understanding of what it was all about.
And we heard that from half the group that we've gotten together with afterwards, even some of the people who were too shy to come on the show. But that seemed to be fairly common. A lot of people said that that was the thing that was sort of sticking with them from the trip.
We kept trying to think of adjectives to describe it. And I think we came up with just evil.
Yeah.
Quite a picture.
And Poland was where we came more into contact with that World War II history than anywhere else, as Lorraine says.
The highlight, I think, was the history. I didn't know the history of Central Europe. It was a surprise for me. Should have prepared a little bit more, I think, before I went. And Jim and I are expecting that over the winter, we'll spend time following up on the history that we learned. Certainly the World War II history that surrounded all of the cities that was involved so much there, and then topping it off with Auschwitz and Birkenau, and then the museums, especially the ones that we saw in Krakow. I think that would be the highlight for me.
Well, and you say the ones you saw in Krakow, you guys, for instance, went to the Gestapo Museum, which I don't think anybody else made it to.
We went to the Gestapo Museum, the Pharmacy Museum, mm-hmm. and the Oskar Schindler Museum when we were in Krakow. Yes. So the Gestapo Museum was a surprise in that it was a different part. It talked about the more regular people that were in Krakow were taken, not necessarily the Jewish people, mm-hmm. but others who were under suspicion. And we saw the cells in the basement of the Gestapo Museum, and we saw what people had engraved into the walls.
Mm, okay. Yeah. And then the Schindler Museum, I think, was probably a surprise to pretty much everybody that I heard, was how extensive that one was. I think some of us had even read reviews that said there's not much there. I don't know what museum those people went to.
I know. We were in there 2 hours. We read as much as we could, but we probably could have stayed a lot longer. There was a lot of reading there.
Well, and as well as, I don't know if you saw the videos of the people when the actual part that was about Schindler, which I think most of it was not.
That's right.
But the one room that was his office that had the videos of the survivors, the people who were on the list, you know, I kind of perused a few of those, but I think there were literally hours of video there.
Yep, that's what we thought. We could have stayed in there a lot longer. If there's ever a return visit, we'll be spending more time there.
Well, and I think I would normally ask, what do you wish you had known? I think you may have already answered that one. Is there another answer besides more World War II history?
I think I would rather have known some of the ancient history, the Turks, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, things like that I didn't know.
Okay. And Holly had a similar impression about the World War II history in Krakow. What surprised you?
Definitely how much World War II emphasis and museum and remembrance there is. There's lots of statues going all through history, but having been where they were located in World War II, they put together a lot of remembrance and detail regarding that event. And I didn't realize that they were not going to forget that very mm-hmm. easily.
Well, it seemed like Krakow more than the other two.
Yeah, and I think that's because they were the center of the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. That was the first group on the hit list were people who were Polish. So mm-hmm. 25% of their population was Jewish. So that was kind of ground zero for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and 2 million Poles who were not Jewish also died in the camps. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Butcher Box is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first Butcher Box. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. And it was Daryl who'd gotten some bad advice about the Schindler's Museum, but gives us some good advice in return. What do you wish you had known before you went?
I guess how good Arthur Schindler's house was.
Schindler's, the museum there? Yeah.
Yeah, somebody gave me a heads up. Come on, I'm not worried about it. I don't need to see that because there was other stuff I was going to do. But all y'all that went seemed to really enjoy it. I mean, the person gave me a heads up, like, make sure you try to get your tickets in advance. And then they was having the thing was further out than it was. That was nothing for me, but...
Well, no, because you were ranging all over the place. So a couple words about these three museums about World War II history that are in Krakow. You can get a ticket for all three of these in advance. That's the Gestapo Museum, which is further out, the Schindler Museum, which is about 2 mile walk from downtown, about 35 to 40 minute walk from the center of the old town. The old town itself is really tiny, not that many blocks wide. The old place where the walled city was, you can still see a park on the map that denotes where the old wall was replaced. And we stayed right next to there in a hotel, and I'll put a link to all the hotels we stayed in the show notes. And so we walked to the Schindler Museum, which is the biggest of these museums and does take a while to see. As we talked about, it is not just about Schindler's List and that story that was told in the movie, but it is really more about the occupation of Poland and about the whole experience there. And then a little bit of it is about the Schindler's List itself. And then there's also this pharmacy museum, which is a little tiny museum, doesn't take that long to do, maybe half an hour, where you're opening up little drawers and watching videos and things, exploring this pharmacy, which was in the ghetto. And it really documents what was happening in the ghetto as the Jews were rounded up and interned and then eventually shipped off to the camps. And so it documents life in the ghetto. And also this pharmacy was a place where people were trying to help. And so it documents some of that story as well. But it's really a ghetto museum of the Krakow ghetto. Get your tickets in advance, especially for the Schindler's Museum. We had to get them at least a day in advance, a day or two in advance, and we were there in September, so not the crush of the tourism in the summer. And you can get them probably online, but we got them from the main tourist office in the cloth market in the main town square. And speaking of the town square and that office, we also got tickets for the archaeology museum that looks at the history of old Krakow, which is actually underneath that town square. And they show you the old walls of the city and several things. I would have to say that museum was a little bit of a mixed bag. The lighting was poor in the museum, so it was hard to read all the signs and things that were there. And so it wasn't as well explained as it could be, although towards the end, when you're leaving the museum, there's a whole series of six different videos, probably 10 minutes long, which are really wonderful at telling the history of Krakow. I kind of wish they had those earlier on in the exhibit and that they had better lighting so that you could actually read the signs that were in there. So not quite sure if I'd recommend that museum or not. This is one of the largest town squares in Europe, with this large cloth hall in the middle of it and restaurants all around it, as well as the main cathedral. Daryl was surprised by Krakow. And what surprised you about the trip?
I guess Krakow.
In what way?
Yeah, I like really big city. I thought it'd be cute and charming. Actually, it was a little bit more lively than I thought, probably a little bit bigger than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably is the thing that surprised me the most. I like it better than I thought I would.
Lively, like the nightlife in the Jewish quarter, that sort of thing?
Jewish quarter, main area.
Main square. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just a little bigger than I thought.
And Derek adds these thoughts. How about Krakow? Krakow.
Krakow. That square with the, was it the Sukhanice markets or whatever? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it by any means, but...
You talk about the central square with the cloth market? The cloth market?
Yes. And the Apollo head statue, which was bizarre and fascinating.
Eros.
Eros statue. I really wanted to see the cathedral that you guys ended up getting into for the concert, mm-hmm. but it was under construction during the day. Was it worth it going in there for you guys?
I did not get in there. Dave and Holly got into there.
I was kind of disappointed that that was gone. The square or the Jewish quarter? Mm-hmm. When I was in the Jewish quarter a few different times, it seemed like a really kind of a hip neighborhood.
Very
it kind
much
of had
so, yeah.
a cool vibe to it. I mm-hmm. feel like that would be like a place that I'd like to go hang out and be schwank and posh, you know, for the evening or something like that.
And a bit of explanation about the cathedral. It was under renovation, and this will happen in Europe. There's always something. When we were in Prague, it was the astronomic clock, unfortunately, that was under renovation, but there is always something. But Holly and Dave did cheat. They got into the cathedral because they were able to go to a worship service, and it was still open for worship. And I skipped that when we got to town, we did our overview walking tour the first day. And I'd say the highlights of that for me were the castle, the old castle that dominates the old town. It's up on a hill above the old town, walled city, very beautiful. Went into the cathedral, which is quite eclectic, just a number of different styles, just even from the outside that you can see. Did that with the tour guide, which was wonderful because we certainly learned more about the different monarchs and the different history of Poland than we would have otherwise. And then the Smok, the dragon statue, which is a fire-breathing dragon statue on the far side of the castle from the old town, is definitely something I would recommend. A wonderful Instagram moment, if nothing else. And then as we talked about the main square with the cathedral, the statue, the head of Eros, the clock tower, which I didn't get a chance to go up into. Again, people took the opportunity to go to some of the concerts in the local churches that were there. My wife and I had a different experience. We went and found nun cookies that were being sold by some of the nuns in one of the cloisters of one of the churches there. And then our way back from Schindler's Factory, many of us got together for dinner in the Jewish Quarter, which, as we said, is the hopping place in the night. It's really where the center of the nightlife is in Krakow. It's a little ironic given the history of that area, but it is a wonderful place to grab some dinner. Joan and I also went to one of the synagogues in the Jewish Quarter and visited that beautiful building there as well. We did one organized day tour from Krakow, and that was to the salt mine. And that's the Wieliczka Salt Mine, which is a very traditional tour. This is one of the first 10 UNESCO sites, and it's very touristy, and you absolutely should do it. I thought it was a wonderful tour of this mine. This is the mine that has a cathedral, a large church rather, built underground there out of salt and statues out of salt, as well as just being a commercial mine. And they talked about how the mine worked commercially, as well as having this beautiful sculptures and things. I thought it was a great trip, and I think most people enjoyed it. We did have one holdout, and that was Derek, who headed off instead to Częstochowa.
I had went to Częstochowa. Well, you guys mm-hmm. all went to the salt mine.
Yeah.
And definitely think that Częstochowa is a kind of a hidden gem for Krakow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure a lot of people will be like, yeah, salt mines, the thing that comes to mind. But Częstochowa was quite an interesting trip into religion, worship versus fanaticism, how much wealth this kind of area has versus the relative seemingly poorness of the places like right outside it. The whole complex is actually quite lavish and beautiful. The story of the relic of Częstochowa.
This is the Black Madonna.
The abridged version painting was made, and they would put these things over the top of it, and they would, all of these pilgrims would come and adorn it with like jewels and gold and all of this stuff. So it ends up coming to Poland. And these thieves decide, oh, there's lots of jewels and gold in that. Let's steal that. So they come, they raid the place, steal the Madonna, and beat up the monks who were guarding her. And shortly outside of town, they rip the jewels and gold off of her and tear the painting into three pieces and leave it off the side of the road and run off with all the jewels. Well, the monks catch up to it like a day later and have some of the best restoration people try and put it back together. And this person that restored it left the two scars on the face of the Madonna as like a reminder of what had happened. And so they still change out this, I don't have know what you would call it actually, but it's her dress, and they change it depending on the season or the event.
Got it. Okay.
And it still has all these jewels, but the whole buildings are really quite cool. And the one thing that I guess I thought was the most interesting, which is maybe a little bit more macabre than what most people would go there to see, on the second floor of like the one cathedral where they have the main masses at, there is like an open balcony courtyard thing, and they've got these paintings that depict Jesus Christ in modern settings and modern kind of tragic settings.
Okay. So
these have a really dark modern feel, and if you were trying to think in terms of, well, Jesus was alive and it was wonderful then, and now it's a little bit of a everything's gone to hell, they were really striking. And I remember just spending time there looking at it and going, yeah, I can totally imagine if Jesus was around during the Holocaust, which I think was one of the settings, that that would be how he would look and feel in that moment. And those were just really powerful paintings for me.
And at that point, we got in a van and we headed towards Budapest. But to get to Budapest, it takes a while from Krakow. And so we made one stop, and we made a stop in Slovakia for lunch at yet another UNESCO World Heritage Site, Banská Štiavnica. And Banská Štiavnica was a mining center in Slovakia. We just happened to get there on a day when there was a festival going on, and there were a lot of people who were wearing their mining uniforms, which I wasn't expecting to see. There were kids singing in the little tiny town square. So it was a wonderful little stop and just a little peek into Slovakia before we were on to Budapest. Derek did notice something that the rest of us missed. From the whole trip, one thing that surprised you.
Well, I still can't get over the fact that in Slovakia, our little trip, people were singing songs and laying flowers at Stalin's footsteps, and somebody had a Putin patch on the back of his suit. Like, that kind of took me a little like, oh, all right. I didn't expect this. I don't know if anybody else saw that, but
I did not.
No. I have a picture of it, and it was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
There's always differences of opinion about history. Our first night in Budapest, we did not do a dinner with the J-Way crew like we did at the first night in every other city, because we did it the last night to say goodbye. So instead, we were off on our own. We went over to where there are some of the ruin bars in the old Jewish quarter, and it didn't eat at a ruin bar, but we ate at a food truck court, which is right next to one of the well-known ruin bars in the Jewish quarter, and it had quite a lot of different varieties of food. I think one of the things that surprised me with Budapest is that we did get Hungarian food, but we also got quite a lot of international food. Definitely some place that I felt like I could live as an expat, because I would need a little more variety. Love the pierogies in Krakow. We'll talk about that in a bit, but like the variety in Budapest. And then the next day, again, we did our walking tour. We actually broke the group up into two different groups this time. We always did two groups of seven, but this time we went in different directions. One group went and spent more time in the Jewish quarter, and then the other group spent more time in the Buda side of the city, Buda being the hill and the castle, and Pest being the flat part of the city where the rest of the people lived. We went to the beautiful Szczecin Baths, and we went to a park right near there where there was a World Expo, and there are some recreations of famous buildings throughout Hungary, and then also went to Victory Square with statues of famous Hungarians. And so the group that I was in did the castle part. We also did more time at the Parliament building. I don't think the other group got to that, which is a large, stunning building on the banks of the Danube. Dave and Holly managed to go back and get inside on an English-speaking tour, but you do want to book those in advance, as we learned, as the English tours especially will fill up. The other thing that we saw later on the banks of the Danube was yet another Holocaust memorial, and this one was shoes that are just there at the banks of the Danube, from where they had people take off their shoes and then shot them and pushed them into the river. So still yet another reminder there. Here are Derek's thoughts on Budapest.
Budapest, for me, the best was up by the St. Matthias Church and the Fisherman's Bastion with that view. Whereas I loved Prague because there was a lot more to it. The Fisherman's Bastion up there had kind of a better view that was very similar in terms of like your orientation and the direction you were facing across the river as it curves around the main area. That was primo real estate up there. I really liked that. Great pictures.
And Lorraine again. What surprised you?
I think the actual physical beauty of the cities. I had expected them to be more destroyed in World War II and to see what was left of them or what had been remade. And when we looked at Budapest and the beautiful chain bridge that had been built back up, I didn't think that the buildings would be quite as pretty to look at and so much beside one another. There were so many of them. So I think that surprised me.
Prague isn't all old architecture. Some of us had a chance to see the Dancing Building, which was inspired by Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers and is a Frank Gehry building. There's also a very funky and mesmerizing statue of the head of Kafka that morphs as you watch it, as different pieces of it rotate around. It's very, in some ways, Kafka-esque. Favorite picture or souvenir?
I think a few pictures that we took in the beautiful baths in Budapest, the Szczesny baths. I think they make me smile when I see them. I remember the end to a wonderful trip, and I also remember how relaxing it was after so many miles of walking to to sit with all the locals and to have our feet nice and warm and to enjoy that. So I think the pictures we took of each other, looking at them now, where we look quite happy, content, and we have all the local people in the background. So I think they would be our favorite pictures.
What was the highlight for you?
I guess the highlight was just me and Jim and Lorraine, the nighttime cruise on the Danube, because everything was lit up in Budapest. That was probably it.
Well, and you guys were smart because you jumped on that and got that booked, where some other people, myself included, didn't do that in time. So I've heard good things from all those who did that.
Like, I sent an email on Facebook saying, anybody want to join us? And I know y'all tried to do something that same day. I like the picture of the bus that somebody took a picture of at the Danube.
And Daryl mentions the picture of the bus. This is something we saw in the Danube, and it looked like a regular bus, except that it was going down the river. So that was a very odd thing. But what he was talking about is that while some people did the traditional nighttime cruise, some of us took the advice of one of our tour guides and did a local boat, which just goes up and down the river. It is included in your transit pass during the weekday, although you have to pay extra for that boat on the weekend, and we were actually using it on the weekend. We did have a little problem, though, because the guide had told us, why don't we catch the last one? I think it was at 7 o'clock, and then maybe we'd get some of the sunset, but it turns out that was where the boat ended, pretty much, and so that plan didn't work out so much, as Derek won't let me forget.
You can't forget the wonderful view we had stuck by the river waiting for the boat that was never going to take us anywhere. That was a wonderful place.
Sometimes things don't work out in travel. Took the advice of our guide to do that boat tour at the last possible one, and we were too late. Our information was a little off, but
I did end up getting to do the boat tour, and I will say it is really worthwhile expenditure. Some of the other people in the group did it in the evening, which I think would be a little bit more spectacular. But getting a really great view of the Parliament building on the Pest side was, I mean, worth price of admission in my book.
We actually did end up going back and doing that local boat the next day. And so it was lovely although I think you're right that I think doing it in the evening would be even more so. The other thing that didn't work out that well in both Budapest and Prague was some scheduling. One thing you wish you had known.
In terms of the general destinations, mm-hmm. I wish I had known more about the religious schedules, okay. as I think both in Prague and in Budapest, I ran up against like holy days for the mosques and for the synagogues, and so they were closed.
Hmm.
And the one in Budapest has the all the little leaves on the trees with the names of the Holocaust victims.
Hmm.
And you could see it from the street, but it just wasn't the same as being able to go in and see that synagogue. So I wish I had known or paid more attention to like, oh, Holy Week starts the day after you have the time. So you should have gone the day before. And the day that we went, it was closed. So it was like, damn.
What do you wish you had known before you went?
I didn't realize there were so many great things to see that weren't just generally available, or you saw them or you didn't. And I think if I'd known that, I think I would have paid more attention to highlights that I wanted to see and what were the schedules. And would have had that in my back pocket. That probably would have been helpful. I've done that on other trips, but I thought Central mm-hmm. Europe, you know, how much can there be? Well, how foolish.
Well, and was that more true in one of the cities than the others, or?
Yeah, Budapest was a surprise.
Okay.
There was more there for, frankly, a tourist than I would have thought. But we scrambled, and we got to see them.
Well, so you, for instance, were scrambling to get tickets to the Parliament, which you got to see, and a lot of us didn't, because you did scramble and get tickets to that. What else stands out that you were glad that you did?
The Széchenyi Baths.
Mm-hmm.
That also required a ticket, and they were selling out. That's no little bathhouse. I mean, it is enormous. And just finding your way around inside, it was like a maze.
One place that just Daryl H. and I got out to was the Statue Park. And I actually think that was very well worth the trip. I mean, it's a little mm-hmm. outside of Budapest, but the statues are actually quite interesting and kitschy, and it definitely gives you an appreciation for the time and that institutional power that they were trying to send with those things.
And you're talking about all the statues of Lenin and Stalin and the like who have been...
The Workers' Republic and the people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gathered together and put in one place.
Really, there's a little bunker off to the side of it, too. And you can go in and they've got a film in there about the period. And I think it was like how to train a Soviet spy worker. And so they had all of these like clips from like old films where they would be telling these guys about if the man has long hair and is wearing Western fashions, he's probably up to no good. And you just were like, was that really how you were teaching your spies? I don't get that. It was strange. It was funny and enjoyable.
You heard Lorraine say how much it felt good to sit in the Széchenyi Baths at the end. We did do quite a lot of walking on this trip. How many steps did you average in these cities per day?
The ones with you, I'm not sure. I didn't break it down that way, but it was probably like 30,000 steps I was at.
I think that was above average. I think we were only doing about 20,000 steps, but it's good we were doing some steps because I really enjoyed the food there. One of the things that was named as some of the best food, but also one that people had problems with, was in Krakow, and that was the pierogi. Any favorite things to eat from this trip?
The most unusual was, of course, the blueberry pierogies.
Okay, the dessert pierogies, yeah.
I don't know if you saw the picture of my giant schnitzel when I was at the wine festival. We skipped out.
Yep.
I had this huge schnitzel.
Schnitzel?
Yeah, it was huge. So that was good.
And as Daryl mentioned, some of us spent the afternoon in the palace grounds up in Budapest, at a Hungarian wine festival, drinking Hungarian wines with a representative of J-Way. It was an enjoyable day. It's nice to have days like that on your trip where you can just sit and enjoy your traveling companions instead of racing off to see one more thing. And the wine festival was that for me. And also just a chance to really enjoy Hungarian wine, which I did not know but quite enjoyed. And those of you who subscribe to the Amateur Traveler email list, and all of you should, know that we ran into listeners of the show while drinking wine in the Hungarian Wine Fest. And so a shout out to Ketelin and Carl, who we ran into at the wine festival. One thing you were glad that you ate.
The duck liver pate was excellent. And it's kind of frowned upon now in the United States, but it was good. I liked that a lot.
And that was in Prague at the first restaurant we went to as a group, as I recall.
It was there. It was also prevalent at the food fest.
Oh, got it. So sure. Mm-hmm.
If I added another, it would be the tartare. You know, we call it steak tartare. They just call it tartare. You know, must have my tartare with my beverage. Mm-hmm. It's apparently their favorite bar food. And it was delicious. Mm-hmm. They add stuff to it, and it's like a spread, and it's very tasty and apparently quite safe because they eat it all the time. Pierogies are still not my friend.
Pierogies are still not your friend. That's too bad. They were really good.
They were really good. We were musing when we got back about what was it that some of us had just a lot of indigestion from eating pierogies. And we're wondering if it's because they make them with lard, and then maybe it was the lard. Because what was different about them? Could have been.
Been the quantity.
It could have been the quantity.
It was an interesting excursion for a vegetarian and trying to find something to eat. And
oh, sure, yeah.
four countries that were meat, definitely meat heavy on the menus.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it was fun. Didn't find any total surprises, but it made speaking the language a little bit more important and a little bit more fun.
Any recommendations for vegetarians who follow behind you? Best dish you found?
I think actually the best dish I found was a little treat in Slovakia when we stopped at that little mining town. Mm-hmm. And I had noodles and poppy seeds, which apparently is a big treat in Slovakia. And I enjoyed that. And certainly pierogies in Poland and Krakow. They were delicious and I had my fill of those.
Excellent.
And of course, the dessert in Prague. Tredelnik, the dough that was put on a spit and had sugar on it, and it was lovely.
Okay, excellent. Mm-hmm. The one that is a traditional Hungarian dish, but...
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes, it is.
Well, we enjoyed it in Prague anyway, yes.
Excellent. And if you wonder why I'm laughing about the mention of Tredelnik in Prague, I was on a press trip earlier in the year in the Czech Republic and literally had instructions from the Czech Tourism Board not to mention these traditional but untraditional pastries. You'll find them all over Prague, but they're not really a Czech pastry. But you wouldn't really know that by going to Prague because they're quite common in the tourist center of the city. As we start to wrap this up, I think one of the only frustrations for me is there are so many things nearby we could have seen. We really did limit this to a 10-day trip, and so we didn't see everything nearby. Daryl, for instance, though, did a much longer trip, so I asked him for where you should see while you're in this area. Are there any places right near that area that you would say if you're going to go to those three cities, you should also try and get to...
Berlin,
okay, sure. Mm-hmm.
Berlin, and I just heard your podcast on Berlin, mm-hmm. and there was a museum I didn't even know about, the Allied Museum.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not downtown, it's like western part, but mm-hmm. if I went to Potsdam, I could have went there. That could have sounded interesting. Mm-hmm. Berlin and Vienna is close to there, too. Vienna really surprised me because I'm like, okay, opera, man, I really don't want to go. My wife said you have to go. And Vienna is really pretty and lots of stuff to do there.
Okay. And we'll give Holly the last word. One thing you would have changed about this trip?
I would have stayed longer. I would have stayed longer in Budapest, at least another day, mm-hmm. and seen a little more. But it was a great trip, so... No complaints.
It is my hope that you were inspired by this podcast to join us for a trip in the future. And remember, the next trip is Africa in May of 2019. And you can find that information again at amateurtraveler.com/Africa2019. I don't know why we put it there. It just seemed like the right place. I did get an email from Jeff talking about the show that we did recently on Boston, another great episode. I love visiting Boston with my cousins. You almost had all the national park areas, and I know time is limited on the show. A couple you partially touched on but never came out right and mentioned are Boston African American National Historic Site, the Black Heritage Trail, Salem Maritime National Historic Site, Salem, and of course, Cape Cod National Seashore, Provincetown. The final three to mention are Adams National Historic Park, Longfellow National Historic Park, and Frederick Law Olmsted National Historic Site. I smiled when you mentioned Beverly, as my ancestors settled there in 1638, and they have a great little historic society slash museum, which leads me into visiting the New England Historic Genealogical Society on Newbury Street, Boston, to delve into all your New England ancestry. Jeff was a retired park ranger from Joshua Tree National Park who joined us for that episode, so I trust him when he talks about national parks. And I should say that while I said Beverly as I read that email, I can still hear the train conductor up in Boston saying, "Beverly!" With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit and watch.